Welcome to the Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoeffer of Northwestern University. The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it. We gratefully acknowledge contributions to sustain the Infrastructure Show from Dr. Robert Peskin, Dr. Raymond Ellis, and Andrea and Ron DeFeo. The temporal availability of renewable energy from solar and wind sources is determined by natural phenomena, but the timing of the demand for energy is driven by business and human activity cycle. Matching supply and demand over time requires storing energy so that it's available when it's needed. A common strategy is grid-scale storage, which means placing massive storage capacity somewhere on the electrical distribution grid so it can be widely distributed when it's required. To help us understand large-scale energy storage strategies and technologies, we've invited Nate Blair, who is Group Manager of Distributed Systems and Storage Analysis at the USDOE National Renewable Energy Laboratory, to join us. Nate is an energy system modeler. He holds an MBA as well as an MS in mechanical engineering from the University of Wisconsin, and he began with a bachelor's in physics from Gustavus Adolphus College. Nate, I'm really happy to talk with you today.
Great, thank you, and I'm really happy to be here as well.
So first of all, fill out what my description of grid-scale storage. Why are we doing this?
Well, we're doing it for a couple of reasons, and a really good question, and it's evolving rapidly. So it's kind of an exciting area from a research perspective. But as you may know, solar PV and wind are two of the now the cheapest options to build as far as producing energy. Obviously the sun doesn't shine at night and the wind doesn't blow all the time. So one of the questions is what to do about that as we have more solar and more wind on the grid providing power. The obvious choice is to store that, right? So we've been doing that for many years. With pumped hydro storage, which I think a lot of people have perhaps heard about. So, you know, hydropower creates energy as it goes over the dam. But then there are certain systems where they pump the water back to use electricity and then save that water and create electricity with it later. And we've been doing that for many, many years. But what's exciting of late is that the cost of lithium ion batteries has dropped 90% roughly in the last dozen years. And so it's really become a viable option to deploy batteries at the grid scale, right? So people have been deploying batteries in remote areas and in conjunction with PV systems for years as well. But this growth in using them on the grid has really grown. And it's in part because of the growth of renewables and in part because of the dramatic price decrease in lithium ion batteries in particular.
Are there applications or is there a need for grid scale storage beyond renewable energy sources? That is to address demand management through the day.
Yeah, there's one of the interesting things about battery storage or grid-scale storage is that there are a lot of different what we call grid services that they can provide. So helping manage the frequency and the voltage on the grid by kind of pushing power on or pulling it off in very short timescales, providing backup in case something breaks or goes offline. I think some people know that on super hot days and super peaky days, we have a lot of demand, often due to air conditioners. And that's when some of our what we call peaker plants, which are natural gas plants normally in the U.S., those come online just for maybe 5%, 10% of the year. As batteries have gotten cheaper and cheaper, people are saying, well, maybe it's cheaper to buy a battery for those peak periods rather than buy an additional peaker plant using natural gas.
So interesting. So from your point of view, are you actually seeing that cost differential, that batteries are becoming dominant?
I don't know that dominant's the right word. I think we are seeing situations where people are putting in batteries instead of peaker plants. It's highly dependent on the price of natural gas, which I think everybody knows has gone crazy over the last couple of years. And so I think there's a lot of uncertainty around the cost of, the future cost of natural gas.
But it would seem to me that if you choose a lithium-ion battery instead of a peaker plant, that you have a more certain ability to predict the future cost stream than you would if you were dependent on natural gas.
I think that's true. I think that's true. Once it's just like with a PV plant and a wind plant, they don't batteries are charging off of the grid, so you have an idea of what that's going to be, and all the costs are primarily upfront costs. So there's a lot of analysis that goes into all of this and what the utility or the grid might need in the future. Another area that that people might understand is that there's a lot of interest in building more transmission capacity in the U.S., transmission lines, and those are slow and difficult to get approved and permitted, particularly over longer periods. And so one of the things that batteries could do and I think are doing in some limited cases already is saying, hey, we're gonna store energy at this end of the transmission line and push it through maybe later, or so we don't need quite as much growth in transmission.
So there could be in some circumstances a trade-off between the ability to store and the capacity of the transmission lines.
Right. Exactly.
So take you back to battery technology. Are other technologies or other storage technologies feasible and competitive? I'm thinking of read something about flow batteries and more recently storing energy in terms of heat, heat and carbon blocks. Are those technologies, are they close at hand or are they just not competitive?
So there's a couple of pieces there that I'd like to unpack. One, first I'll give a shout out to our storage futures study at NREL. If you just Google that, you'll come to about 7 or 8 different reports. And we have a report there that compares and kind of grabs information about a number of these technologies. And I think that there are, here at NREL, we're working on a number of emerging storage technologies, including hydrogen storage, thermal energy storage, gravity storage, et cetera. And so there's a number of ways to store energy that are interesting and potentially could have real applications. I think the difference between some of these technologies is that these are only relevant for the grid storage market, whereas lithium-ion batteries are relevant for the grid storage market, but also the much larger vehicle market, as well as the really robust and mature consumer electronics market. So I'm talking to you on a phone that already has a lithium-ion battery in it, whereas some of these other technologies are only relevant for the grid storage market, as I said.
So what I hear you saying is that because there are multiple applications, the lithium-ion technology advances more quickly.
It maybe advances more quickly, but the you get economies of scale with lithium-ion batteries, and you get really, really large amounts of these being built, and that drives down the cost significantly. So it makes it difficult for some of these other technologies to scale up and drive down their cost. Having said that, I think it's important to maybe differentiate between what I would call diurnal storage, which is storage where you're storing maybe solar in the middle of the day and using it later that night, or using it overnight, or storing some wind and using that the next day. And so that goes up to about 10 hours of storage. in terms of duration. Like, hey, we can run this for so much power for 10 hours. Beyond 10 hours of duration, we call that long duration. So there are periods that utilities have identified and other people have identified where we need longer duration storage, where maybe there's several days where it's not sunny and several days where it's not windy. How do we get through that?
So is lithium ion battery capable of dealing with those long-term storage situations?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But you just need to buy more of them. So as you get to more than 10 hours of storage, there are some other technologies like perhaps hydrogen storage, thermal storage, gravity storage, et cetera, as you mentioned, which are cheaper as you make them larger and larger, right? So they might be cheaper than lithium-ion batteries if you have to produce power for 20 or 24 straight hours.
So this is not my area of expertise, but my guess is that there are lesser scale economies in building bigger and bigger lithium-ion batteries as opposed to, say, pumped storage.
Yeah, no, I think every one of these technologies that's emerging has pros and cons, just as batteries would. So I think with pumped hydro storage, it's actually pretty low cost when you get out past 10 hours because you have a lot of investment in building a dam or building a connection point between two reservoirs and all of that infrastructure. But then you can run it often, you know, reservoirs are large and you can run a pumped hydro storage system for hours and hours and hours. But they're difficult to site, right? So you need to find a place that has the right the right geography, as well as then being able to permit it and, you know, deal with the existing reservoirs. So NREL does quite a bit of work on looking at what those options are for people and trying to work with the industry to see if there are good options to build out that technology.
So take us back to lithium ion battery storage.
Sure.
How large are these batteries?
Well, they're, you know, I think people are familiar with containers. So
shipping containers.
Yeah, shipping containers. Mm-hmm. So usually what happens is they're modular. And so you get a couple megawatts in a small shipping container. And they usually are then grouping those like Legos to try to add up to the amount of power and duration that's needed at that particular location. And so one of the things that's interesting is, you know, you can build out a storage system and then come back in a couple of years and add more to it. You know, you might say, oh, now instead of 50 megawatts and 4 hours here, we need 100 megawatts and 6 hours or something like that, and continue to add to that existing capacity. Most of these systems are modular. And so they build the modules in a factory and then, you know, ship out as many as you need and then connect them together.
So, and are they readily available off the shelf today in container-sized packages?
Yep. There are a number of different manufacturers that are in this space. Tesla's one of the ones that actually builds large battery systems as well as residential battery systems in cars, obviously. And so they're a well-known brand, but there are a number of other brands that are working in this space, both in front of so with these grid scale batteries, and then some of the same companies will make ones for your home or off-grid applications.
What about sustainability? I mean, is there a limit to the number of charge-discharge cycles that lithium-ion batteries can sustain?
Yes, definitely. That's the degradation of the battery is something that lots of researchers around the planet are working on. You know, what's another magical magic chemical that we could add to the battery to make it last longer, store charge better, et cetera. And I think that's, you know, that's an active area of research. But a lot of times you'll see it really depends. And this is why it gets complicated. It really depends on how you use the battery. So, for example, if you just have it mostly sitting there and not discharging and charging a lot, it will last longer than if you are charging it with solar every day and discharging it every night, right? So then, you know, that lifetime might be 10, 12 years as opposed to 15, 18 years or something. So this is an area that's evolving rapidly. A lot of people are doing different kinds of research to improve that. For the EV market, they're working to, you know, increase the power density, right? So that would reduce the weight of your car and the amount of space it takes up to, you know, give your car 300 miles or 400 miles or something like that. So there's a number of different chemistries and things that are evolving on that front. But the degradation is an issue with the lithium ion batteries. And so, you know, a typical power plant, we think of as having maybe a 30-year lifetime. Some of them are 40. Some nuke plants are pushing past 40 at this point. But what you would do with a battery system is either add some more batteries at the very beginning, and so that as it degrades, it still meets the, call it 50 megawatt need after 10 years or 12 years. And then, or you can come in later and start replacing different modules or augmenting modules as you go along in the future. And with the anticipation of costs continuing to decline, you know, that second option might be real attractive. But battery manufacturers will give you a warranty on how much the battery will produce over that whole lifetime, depending on how you're using it. So that's a pretty, from a financial perspective, that's all pretty cut and dried in terms of warranties.
Yeah. So if they're giving a warranty, then they have the capability to predict.
Yep.
How this system is going to perform. Are there any issues with hazardous waste or hazardous materials in these batteries?
Yeah. So the two things. One is, you know, I think the lithium and then, you know, nickel, manganese, cobalt. Another common chemistry is lithium iron phosphate. Iron and phosphate are readily available and cheap. But there's a lot of firms building up to recycle lithium ion batteries because the value of lithium makes it worthwhile to recycle them. So a couple of different approaches. Some of them are electromagnetic, where they're using magnets to pull the metals out of the kind of the remaining parts, and then some are just beating up the you know, crushing the batteries and trying to separate to the point where you get a fine dust, and then they try to separate it out. So there's a couple of different firms, a couple of different U.S. firms. And I think the idea is that eventually you have a more of a circular economy where once the batteries are done, they go in and get recycled. And, well over in what I've seen, this is not my area per se, but what I've seen is that well over 90% of the materials are recovered, and then they can go back into the manufacturing stream again.
So it's a dynamic field. It's not what you're describing is work that's in progress. That is, we're using this technology, but we're also involved in research to develop alternatives and to refine the technology, the lithium-ion technology itself.
Yeah, Enron has kind of three core objectives at the moment, and one of those is the circular economy. So really trying to understand how to deploy things in a way that they can be more easily recycled, and helping firms build up recycling capabilities for these.
So to support long-term sustainability.
Yep.
Very interesting, Nate. I really appreciate your spending the time with us today to educate us on grid-scale storage, lithium-ion batteries. We'll keep an eye on what's going on at NREL and try and make sure that we cite some of your studies when we post this podcast interview. So thanks for the conversation.
Always happy to talk about these areas.
Very, very glad to talk with you.
Anytime.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The Infrastructure Show. If you enjoyed the conversation as much as we did, please subscribe to our podcast and encourage your friends to join us too. The Infrastructure Show is recorded at the Studio Media Recording Company in Evanston, Illinois, under the direction of Scott Steinman, recording engineer with a commitment to great sound. Our producer is Marion Sowers, a journalist with a passion for infrastructure. And I am Professor Joseph Schoeffer. Few people are more curious about infrastructure than I am.